Folks, if you're going to live and work on purpose, you need to grab the power of one more and make it work for you. My guest today is Ed Milette, best-selling author of the new book, The Power of One More, wildly successful entrepreneur and businessman, and now host of The Ed Milette Show. He's one of the top influencers in our world today. And we have a great conversation that I know is going to equip and encourage you. Here is my conversation with Ed Milette. Well, Ed, I know you have seen many, many studies, the work that you and I do. We always hear about burnout. Burnout's not a new thing, but we see more and more and more and more of it. And the reports show so many different reasons why people feel burned out. But one of the things that I experience on this show is people calling and saying, I feel overwhelmed. And sometimes it's a function of poor leadership. And sometimes it's a function of time management and feeling like they have to say yes to everything. And you're really good at that. You've really tailored your life around getting a lot done, but the right things done. And so I want to set you up on that. So let's go into the situation where somebody may not need to be as overwhelmed, Ed, as they're feeling if they were able to say yes to the right things, no to the things that don't matter, and really figure out how to navigate getting more things. I want your thoughts on a lack of time management and a lack of discipline feeding into feeling burned out.
100%. By the way, I really struggled with this young. When I say young, like as of like 4 years ago, this is something I really had a hard time with. Two things I'll say: overwhelmed. Typically, you're not overwhelmed. You're experiencing the emotion of being overwhelmed because your results are starting to exceed your identity. Mm-hmm. And because your results are exceeding your identity, you're just trying to find a way unconsciously to put the air conditioner of your life back on and cool it back down to what you're comfortable with. So be real careful with really believing you're overwhelmed. You're much more capable than that. What's happening is your results are getting out there a little bit. Maybe they've exceeded your identity. You're cooling things back down. Time management. The biggest thing I've learned in my life is the fallacy of the 24-hour day. As you know, in the book, The Power of One More, I talk a lot about this. I have a whole chapter on it. This is an outdated, antiquated, ridiculous concept that a day is 24 hours. We came up with this stuff before there was electricity, right? Certainly before there was an internet. You can do things much faster now, much more time efficiently. Yet most human beings still measure themselves in 24-hour increments. It's insane. We've all had mornings where we go, I got more done this morning than I get done in a day or in a week. That's because you've compressed time frames. So I run what I call mini days. My days are from 6 a.m. to noon. My second day is noon to 6 p.m. My third day is 6 p.m. to midnight. Those days are filled not with just work, with faith, with fun, with appointments, with my family things, but I've shrunk time frames. And that's because I can Google something in 1 second that used to take weeks to figure out. That's because I can text, message, or call as opposed to having to mail something they'll get in 2 weeks. And so it's nuts that people still measure themselves in 24-hour increments. And that's why you're overwhelmed, because you're not bending and manipulating time like superhuman productive people do. And so I've changed that. That doesn't mean it's all work. There's all kinds of fun in there. Some of those days are slept off. Sundays are certainly very different than the other days. But if I'm going to get 21 days in a week and you're going to get 7, you're going to be overwhelmed and I'm not. And what happens is when your days are those increments, an unconscious clock goes off right about the top about noon every day where I go, okay, what did I get done in the last day? What do I need to recalibrate? What do I need to refocus on? As opposed to measuring it at the end of the month or the end of the year, I'm measuring it every 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours in most cases. So, and the last thing that happens is the world responds differently to you when you measure time differently. You seem more valuable. What's more, the more rare something is, the more precious and valuable it becomes. So you become more precious and more valuable when you shrink your time frames. The last thing I'll say is evaluate how long a meeting needs to be. Everybody blocks off an hour for a meeting that sometimes can be done in 10 minutes or a 30-minute meeting that can be done in 20 minutes. I start to really evaluate. Sometimes my meetings are scheduled for 4 minutes. We need a 4-minute conversation. And then I'm on to more productive things. So these ideas of 24-hour days and hour-long meetings are antiquated concepts that can cause you to feel overwhelmed.
All right, folks, that's fantastic. I just came up with a great idea for you, Ed. So you and I both know Ferris. He got on the scene with the whole 4-hour work week. I like the 4-minute meeting. This is your next book, the 4-minute meeting. You just set me free with this concept. I'm going to be throwing that one around all over the place.
Well, I got to tell you, my staff knows there's 4-minute meetings. There's 22-minute meetings. It's insane, isn't it, that we just calibrate time in these increments and then we waste the time?
Yes.
How many meetings have you had? This is why your show's so effective. This isn't 3 hour conversation. We're going to get the same stuff done in this 20 minutes or whatever it'll be, three minute segments, than we would get done in a 3 hour conversation.
I love it. I love it. It's like a Snickers, baby. It satisfies you. Let's go. How long does it take to eat a Snickers? I'm going to tell you right now, I can get a Snickers down in 2.5 bites. It's probably unhealthy, but I get it done. And it's satisfying.
I believe you, brother.
All right. So, hey, I want to ask you about, I want to ask you your thoughts on, you just gave us some wonderful tactical stuff on those three mini days, but you said you struggled with this, and somebody as successful as you are in multiple different areas at some point starts to learn how to say no. Mm-hmm. Would you just talk to us about that? It feels like we've got to get to a point where we're okay disappointing some people, or maybe realizing that we're not disappointing them at all. We just have to say no to be able to then make some more efficient decisions. Your thoughts on no, pleasing people, why we have a hard time saying no.
I have to, I told you earlier, this is something I've really struggled with, and I've learned to do it tactfully. I've learned to just say, listen, I love you. I appreciate you. I respect you. And because I respect you, I'm going to be candid with you. Mm-hmm. I can't get this in right now. And so I always try to link it to the respect level for them. There's a cold way to turn somebody down that is hurtful. What I've found in my life is we're so concerned with what people are thinking about us. And the truth is they're not thinking about us. They're thinking about what we're thinking about them. And so if you can let them know that you think favorably of them as you tell them no, you've inoculated them from feeling negative about you, that you're not supporting them or anything like that. And I'll say things like, look, I don't want you for a minute to feel like I'm not supporting you or what you need to get done. I just need to be candid with you right now. This is not something I can commit to at this time. The last thing I'm going to do is make a half-baked effort to help you or to show up and not be focused. And I've learned to do it. And here's what I've found out. I have almost never offended somebody when I let them know how I feel about them as I'm telling them no. And it is the most freeing thing. You have hit on something that changed my life because I'm a people pleaser.
Yes.
I have a really hard time had with thinking I've hurt somebody. And I've realized over time that just the respect level of getting back to somebody is different. The worst thing that people do where you really hurt yourself is you want to say no, or you avoid saying no, and you don't get back to somebody in a really expeditious fashion. And so I get back quickly, and I just say, listen, I can't. I want to get this off the table right now. I love you. I adore you. I respect you. I wish I could contribute. Right now, I cannot. And my mental health, my productivity, everything about my life has changed as I've learned just to be candid and truthful and tactful with people.
Hey, we're going to get you right back to our conversation with Ed Mylett, but I want to remind you about my friends at ZipRecruiter. They are one of the top hiring sites in the United States and a free resource to you. Companies are paying them to get access to talent like you. And the bottom line is they make the job hunt so much easier and less frustrating. With just a couple of minutes of effort, you get a profile set up and they begin recruiting for you. They connect you directly to companies. When companies say, I want to talk to you, I don't know why you wouldn't do it. It's free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. Let's get back to my conversation with Ed right now. I want to talk about something you write about, you speak about, you post about a lot, the multiplier. All right, teach us here. What is the multiplier? How do we apply it?
Well, multipliers are different things, but often when you're building an organization or a team, if you can add a one more multiplier, I call them, they create a complete change in your entire organization. John Maxwell calls it the law of the catalyst, is the way that he phrases it. But when you bring people into your organization that multiply the efforts of other people, you know, in football, there's a great analogy I actually use in the book. I believe I referenced Tom Brady and the fact that Brady, although he's, you know, maybe not the most athletic guy in the world, you add him to your organization, there's a multiplier. The Bucs won the Super Bowl not just because Brady joined the team, but because he was there. Antonio Brown wanted to join. Leonard Fournette wanted to join. Rob Gronkowski wanted to join. Free agents re-signed for less money when there's a multiplier. This is true in business as well and in families. In families, there's multipliers. There are dads who are multipliers in a family. There are mothers who are multipliers in a family where they don't just make the family a little bit better. They multiply. They expand the commitment of the family. They expand the contribution of the family. And when you're in business, you're looking for multipliers. You're looking for people that just don't add 1+1, but 1+8 oftentimes when you add the right person to your family. My businesses, the ones that I built that have been successful, and you know, I've been blessed that there have been several of them, are because I look for multipliers. I look for, I call them rabbits sometimes. They set the pace and everybody else chases them. Somebody has to be the person to set the pace, to set the cadence. In football, I interviewed Rodney Harrison, New England Patriot, really quick. He says, hey, I used to show up to the gym at 6 a.m. when I was in New England. I was always the first guy in the gym because we would do film at 9 and the team would work out after that. Goes, the first year there's this skinny rookie in there and I get in there at 6. He's already there working out at 5:30. And I say to him, who the heck are you? He goes, I'm Tommy Brady. He goes, the next morning I show up at 5 a.m. to beat the guy there. He's still there. He got there at 4:30 that morning. Says, I show up the next morning at 4:30. The dude's walking out, had finished his workout at 4:30. It was this kid, Brady. He was not going to let anybody get there earlier than him or stay later than him. He was getting to the gym at 3 o'clock in the morning just to beat me there. That's a one more multiplier.
Wow. I love that. Okay. So I want to stay here, Ed, because we've now defined what that is, what it looks like in a sense of the effect. But let's talk about coaching someone right now. Let's coach our audience. These people want to get in and then they want to move up, right? So they're in. How do they become multipliers in the present so that they eventually set themselves up to get the next?
Okay. So in my opinion, you don't always get your goals. And so I wrote about this in the book. I have a chapter on what I call standards. In life, we probably get about 20 to 25% of our goals. However, we always get our standards. Long term, you will always get your standards. So if you want to be a multiplier, it's your standards. So what's the standard got to be? If you lack self-confidence, one of the reasons you do is you've not consistently kept the promises that you make to yourself. Bottom line, self-confidence is one's reputation or relationship with themselves. So one standard would be, I don't keep the promises I make to myself. I have no self-confidence whatsoever. The second standard is what most people strive to have, and that is I do what I say I'm going to do, which is wonderful. You're going to be a very successful person, but you want to be great, you set a higher standard than that. And that standard is I do one more than what I say I'm going to do. And when you build that reputation with yourself long-term, I say I'm going to make 10 contacts in a day, I make 11. I say I'm going to tell my daughter I love her every day, I tell her twice. I say I'm going to do 10 reps in the gym, I do 11. When you begin to change the standard of your life, and that standard is one more, now you almost become superhuman. When you do that long-term, not only do you benefit from the fact that you've done one more contact, you've told your daughter you love her one more time, you've done an extra minute on the treadmill every single day, you start stacking up those one mores, you've just done more. But that's not the powerful part. The powerful part is you've changed who you are. Mm-hmm. You've changed your identity. I am someone who doesn't just keep the promises I make to myself. I do one more than what I say I'm going to do. That is a standard that is unheard of in life. And you become one of those very rare multiplier people in whatever organization you're in, including leading your own.
Yeah, I think that's right. Folks, listen, I hope you get this from Ed. If you embrace the power of one more, you'll never want for a promotion. I'm just telling you, even in a place of toxic leadership, you'll move on and healthy leaders will recognize you. I love the power of one more. It is, of course, the title of the new book. And I love the backstory behind any kind of a book. Having written three books, it's like birthing a child. It's a process, isn't it? And you try to come up with the concept and then you unpack it and then all the things. And I love the title. I love the content more. But what I really love is where the idea comes from. Tell our audience where this concept of one more, how that came to you and the impact it had on you.
My dad. And so my dad's my hero, but my dad was an alcoholic and a drug addict my first 15 years of my life.
Wow.
And tried to get sober many times and just couldn't or didn't. And then I remember I was 15 and my dad and I were driving and he pulled over and he had tears in his eyes and he says, I'm going to try one more time to get sober. I said, Daddy, what would be any different this time? He says, I got one last shot. These one mores kept coming up. I said, what do you mean? He says, Mama told me she's taking the family and your mom deserves a husband she can be proud of. And you need a daddy that you can respect. And so do your sisters. I'm going to try one more time. And then he got sober. And then I said, Dad, are you going to stay sober like the rest of your life? And he said, I don't know. I'm going to stay sober one more day though.
Wow.
And that's affected me, man, so many times in business when I wanted to quit or a job or even a relationship. I'm just not going to quit for one more day. I'm going to give this one more try. And I have a chapter in the book on that. And there's just all these one mores. And I just have this philosophy that the Bible says, you know, where there's no vision, the people will perish. But I think if you peel that back and we really dug deeper, it's not that we don't have any vision. We know how we'd like to feel about ourselves. We want to make our families proud of us. Maybe we want financial success of some type, or we want our home paid off free and clear. We have some vision. The issue is a depth perception issue. We think it's so much further away than it is that we acted in accordance with that false belief. And so we always keep it that far away. We create patterns and behaviors that keep it that far away. I watched my dad in one decision change his life, in one moment change his life. Mm. And so my philosophy is that you are actually one decision away from changing your life, one podcast away, one thought, one emotion, one meeting, one relationship. This, you're that much closer. All of you have proven that. If you're married and happy right now, that one decision to get married, that one decision to ask him out, that one relationship changed your life, that one birth of your child changed your life. So this is true in every area. We just need to begin to believe that we're one away. It may not be all the way there. I tell you two things. One, I'm a series of ones. Mm-hmm. I played golf with a guy 2 weeks ago. He said, you got to meet this guy. He's got a similar net worth to you guys, hundreds of millions of dollars. He got there different than you. I said to him, we meet on the first tee. He goes, I want to hear all about you. I'm a fan of yours. I said, nope, I already know about me. I want to know about you. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, $50,000 turned into $800 million. I said, get out of here. No, it did not. That's not how I got there. It certainly didn't happen for me. He goes, no, in 1986, I loaned $50,000. So did my best friend to a guy. Mm. A week later, my friend asked for the money back. I didn't. I kept the loan. It turned into $750 million. Wow. I said, what did you say? Who did you loan this money to? He goes, guy's name is Jeff Bezos. Mm. I said, You got to be flipping kidding me. Now, that's an exaggerated example of one relationship and one decision that completely altered this man's life. I don't have one of those, but I have a series of them. The last thing I want to say to you, man, it makes me emotional because it just occurred to me last week. I've only said this one other time, so it'll be the second time I've ever said it. I want everyone to hear this, please. My dad doesn't get sober. I'm not on this show. Mm-hmm. My dad doesn't make that decision, give it one more try, stay sober one more day for the next 35 years until he died. Mm. And let me say something to y'all that I just realized after I wrote the book, it is not in the book. Someone helped my dad. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who they are. They changed my family tree. My great-grandchildren are indebted to this person. But here's the hook. You know what qualified that person to help my dad? Their mess. Their drunkenness. Their drug addictness. If they didn't have that mess, they weren't qualified to help my dad. And too often in life, we discount ourselves thinking our mess or the situation we're in, or that why would anybody listen to me? How could I do something significant? You, with your giftedness, your experience, and your story, and whatever mistakes you've made, are one of a kind. And that one of a kind person helped my dad change his entire life, which has helped me help millions of people. So you never know the ripple effect of just who you are and your intent to serve, your intent to help people. Mm.
It's such a beautiful story and a reminder, folks, what Ed just shared, that great impact doesn't always, in fact, rarely attaches itself to large numbers of people knowing about it, or even a whole lot of numbers in your bank account, but the impact of that person on your father and untold tens and tens of thousands of people is truly amazing. We were all created to fill a unique role. That means we are needed, and it means we must do it. Ed, that is so, so powerful. I want to give you one more chance just to speak. I feel like there's a person that's going to watch this and listen to this. Mm-hmm. Who feels like it's too late. Mm. Mm. Who feels like they just aren't enough.
Yeah.
What would you
say? More and more people, you're wrong. You were born to do something great with your life. The DNA of the King of Kings runs through your veins. Mm. And listen to me, it's small ways and big ways. My dad helped thousands of people get sober. I never knew about it until he died. My dad's not on Instagram. Wasn't a wealthy guy. Could care less. My dad never flew on one of my jets ever once. Could care less about that stuff. He lived a great life. I have a sister who's equally successful as I am. She's blind. Hmm. She's a Christian school teacher. She teaches fourth grade. Hmm. I think she makes $40,000 a year. Why is she so successful? She's successful because she's using her giftedness in the service of other people. She does that every day. Her gift is different than mine. Her gift is her nurturing ability, her teaching skills, her patience, her height. She's 4'11". She's the same height as all of her students, right? And she can't even grade papers. And she's one of the greatest teachers in the United States. And so it's not too late for you. In fact, perhaps it's been seasoned. Perhaps you needed this test. Perhaps you needed the experience. Perhaps your time is not before, but it's now. I'll give you a really quick thing that you all need to know. I've become a wealthy person. I think a happy person with very limited skills. I am a pretty good communicator. God gave me a deep voice. That's always good. Mm. But my real gift is the fact that I can be present with people and read them. And you know what that came from? Tragedy. My dad being an alcoholic. When I was a five-year-old little boy and I had three sisters and a mom, when that guy would walk through the front door, my daddy, I would have to look up at him and read him immediately. Which dad am I getting? Is it sober dad? We're going to have dinner and go play catch in the backyard? Or has dad been drinking? What's he walking like? How's he talking? What's his physiology, his language? And if it was drunk dad, I need to get my sisters upstairs and mom should go take a shower. And then I need to be with him and I need to be able to talk him out of that state. And so sometimes your greatest tragedy, your greatest adversity, Napoleon Hill says, if you can survive the temporary pain, on the other side of that, you get introduced to your other self. Maybe you've been going through a struggle for a long time. On the other side of that temporary thing, and it might have been long, but it's still temporary. Everything is temporary other than our souls. You get introduced to your other self. Mm-hmm. There's an other self waiting for you that you were born to be. That is not rah-rah. That is a fact of life. You were born to do something great. Begin to pursue that person. Begin to believe that. Begin to serve with your unique giftedness, your humor, your resiliency, your laughter, your intensity, your problem-solving skills, your kindness, your patience, whatever it might be, your resiliency, and use those gifts in the service of other people. Your time is coming. Your time is coming. You've just been waiting. Remember this. God does not call the qualified. He qualifies the called. And you've been called to do something great if you begin to look for those opportunities.
Amen to that. Great stuff there. Really good. I feel like I should take an offering. Pastor's kid, I feel like this moment I need some music behind me and we just take an offering. It'd be great stuff. He is Ed Milet. The book is The Power of One More. Where in your life do you need one more? I would challenge you that it's in more areas than you've even thought of. It's a great message. You're a great dude, Ed, and I know you got a lot going on, and I know to make time out of your day to have a conversation with us is something that is precious. We very much are grateful for it, and we know we're better for it. Thanks for hanging out with us.
I've been wanting to do this for a long time, brother, and I'm grateful that we did it. Honored to be here. Thank you.
Hey, if you're a fan of this podcast, we've got more where that came from. Ever wondered how to win in business and leadership? I'm George Camel, host of the Entree Leadership Podcast, where you'll hear exceptional advice, origin stories, and practical strategies for success. These weekly conversations with America's brightest business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs will help you succeed in all areas of business and leadership. Listen to the Entree Leadership Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.